Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the home of the first place Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
Deep fly ball to left. This ball's got a chance. Long gone. Tape measure time for Wilson Contreras.
Live from the Hyundai Studios, this is 670 The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. A radio.com sports station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Door Systems, now offering touch-free doors. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
3-2. Center field angle, can't get there. It goes by him. Jones to second. Will it be a second inside the park home run against the Sox? The answer is yes.
Oh, as soon as it get by, that was an inside the park home run. Jones is a burner. And after a great play this inning, this sinking line drive gets by Engel, and this is not a great play.
To right field. And that is it for tonight. Sox fall 5-1 inside the park home run for Jacoby Jones. The big play against Dallas Keuchel, who pitched pretty well again.
We just came out flat, and I feel like we just stayed flat the whole game. You know, we got a lot of guys. You know, I'm going to take that back. We got some guys coming out and taking professional at-bats, you know, being professional on the mound and doing what it takes to win. We got some guys kind of going through the motions, so we need to clean a lot of things up. And, you know, if we want to be in this thing at the end of the season, we're going to have to start that now. And like I mentioned to you guys before, when you have enough talent to potentially win every game, it's very frustrating when you have games like this, and it just seemed like we were out of it from the get-go.
Well, okay then. That is Dallas Keuchel with a strong thought on his teammates. And the next question is, who are you mentioning there? Who came out flat? Who's not playing hard? Come on now. Bad night for the White Sox, who slipped back under 500. And James Fegan, who is on Twitter at JR Fegan, covers the White Sox for The Athletic, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. James, how are you?
I'm okay.
The team you cover, not so much.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, around 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock last night, I wasn't sure what the story was, but so I got rescued there a little bit, but the team probably less so.
What's the impact of a comment like that from Dallas Keuchel? You know, you bring in a vested veteran and you say you get that kind of leadership. I guess that's what you expect, right?
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, I've been covering the team since 2017. There have been some losses where they say they need to be better. They need to, like, you know, whip into shape or something like that. But that's probably like the first time that, especially a player, and, you know, not that Renteria is really predisposed to calling out the team in the media in that way. It's probably the first time that's really happened since this whole process started. So this would be the first time they've really been challenged publicly to say, like, if you want to be a contending team, if you want to take the next step, you know, you need to, like, have a better focus or a better effort level. You know, everything's kind of been placed in the context of long-term development for so long that we really haven't seen that kind of reaction to a single game, at least not publicly. Like, it's kind of a new tact in terms of kind of having that kind of statement to the media, I would say. You can't say, there's definitely been team meetings before where they've addressed it internally, and I know other players have expressed the idea of keeping that in-house. I would say, like, I want to say it was 2018, Ronaldo Lopez said that they played like clowns out there, but it seemed like they kind of, the general reaction was, let's not say that out loud so much to the reporters, was how they kind of fell in line after that, rather than, you know, there's a purpose, or there's a, someone like Calico, who has been on two different playoff teams before and been to this process of rebuilding, clearly saw some utility in kind of doing it publicly like this. So that seems like a new tactic that I haven't seen in this franchise for a while.
What does that say about how Rick Renteria is viewed? I mean, if it's one thing if Renteria is saying this internally, if a manager is stepping in and saying, hey, I need you to be more focused. I need you to have your head in the game. I need you to pull your weight, be ready to go. You know, what does it say that Keuchel felt the need to say this? Because we don't know how it's being managed.
I guess it would say that he feels like what's currently being done as far as internal just kind of handled internally is not producing the results, and so he's taking this new tactic. Like, we've seen, like, even just last year in Detroit when Ronaldo Lopez had that bad game, we saw Rick Renteria, like, clearly frustrated with him and talking to him very, like, you know, sternly in the dugout, and then, you know, post-game being like, oh, yeah, I was just giving him some encouraging words. Like, that type of closing the ranks when it comes to discussing their how they address someone who's not locked in when they talk about it publicly. Given that it's so early in the season, it's so early in the tenure, I feel like it might be, I'd be more, if it were like in the final month or, you know, a year, a season in, and he feels the need to do this publicly because it feels like it's not happening, that's maybe him reacting to, like, you know, I've watched the way the coaching staff handles it and it doesn't work, so I'm doing this now. Whereas the fact that he kind of came to this so early and said it was, you know, this is the first time I saw the effort was not there, so I'm doing this, makes me think like that was just how he approaches it, as more than necessarily like the coaching staff is not doing the job, so I'm going to. But, you know, I could be wrong on that, but that was just, I got the feeling. He kind of digressed a few times and said, you know, this is something young teams go through. This is something I've seen happen before. It's just a natural byproduct of being in rebuild the last 2-3 years that they're not going to make this transition smoothly towards being a team that can't lose games like this. So he did try to minimize it a little bit in the sense of, like, this is just part of the process and that's what I'm doing, but it's striking. I'm very curious to see how briefings go today. I've never been more excited for my Zoom calls this year to kind of see how they place this in the context of what they're doing, because it was a new direction.
Anything on Jose Abreu's injured hip?
They seem to place it in a day-to-day situation that he kind of, when he stepped wrong on the bag, that he felt like this shooting pain through his leg, which, you know, is a great thing to hear about a huge slugger who's 33, but that it had gone away by the end of the game, and they were hoping more it'd be more a day-to-day situation rather than, you know, this is something he's going to get an MRI about necessarily. But yeah, he's at an age and he's at a size where you kind of wonder about everything that happens to him. But at this point, it's not the end of the world yet.
Notice that the White Sox have hit to a high batting average of balls in play that is now starting to regress a little bit. And obviously teams that hit the ball hard are going to have a higher batting average of balls in play. But I wonder how much of a statistical warning sign it is to you that we're seeing that number come down.
I mean, yeah, you don't want to be dependent on it, but that was probably a lot of their progress last year was dependent on that, right? Like September when they had that good offensive year, and basically their best offensive seasons from Anderson and Moncada were all dependent on they're swinging very freely, they're not taking walks, they're very batting average dependent, they're probably expanding the zone a little bit, but we're depending on the idea that they just have so much bat speed and so much, resultant exit velo that they're going to be exceptional in this area and they're going to kind of live off of it a little bit. So having this stretch where it seems like the gains of last week were fueled by something that's not super sustainable, and now you're kind of getting the results of, you know, the last week or so, they've been like one of the 10 worst teams in terms of swinging out of the zone, in terms of swinging strike rate, in terms of strikeout rate. It seems like even if that BABIP is not holding up super high, there's so many other just kind of red flags and things that are attracting from them in terms of play discipline, that it's not really a sustainable approach on its own. So you were kind of hoping that Rendall and Encarnacion and, you know, the emphasis and approach that was coming with Menachino was going to pay off and maybe changing the type of production you saw a little bit. But since none of those guys have really gotten going yet, you're not really seeing it yet. And, you know, without Tim Anderson and when, you know, Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert are running cold, it doesn't look very good.
Grandal's been bad. His weighted runs created plus right now is only 91. It means he's 9% less than the average current major league player on offense. And the defense, while the numbers are right around the level, just watching some of the balls that are bouncing away from him and some that he's just not keeping in front of him, it doesn't look right. Is he okay?
He had a foot issue that he was working with. That he said it was bothering him in his crouch a little bit. I think his approach to catching is a bit more framing at the sacrifice of a ball or two going to the backstop. I think that's probably the choice he would make when it boils down to it. So I don't know if that's something that's necessarily going away. I took the more optimistic take of it as like, man, he's almost floating around league average. The fact he has not looked good at the plate all year as a testament to the fact that he does take a lot of pitches and is still taking his walks. But yeah, he's a power oriented guy with a kind of uphill playing swing. So you shrug off maybe no homers in 17 games or 19. Yeah, we're at this point for maybe another guy, but it's really kind of, crushing mistake pitches type of approach and taking your walks around it. So the fact that he hasn't elevated yet and that he, was just his strikeout rates kind of exploding a little bit and getting burned so many per strikeouts looking. It's not good, but I think he's fundamentally a smart hitter. I want to say it's going to come around at some point because his approach, I feel, is so solid. He's definitely not, getting any faster or getting any younger, and that's something to watch over the course of a four-year deal for somebody who's already 31 and squats for a living. But I have a feeling it's going to come around at some point this year just because I feel like the know-how is still there and the bat hasn't slowed down dramatically in talking to scouts. But, yeah, he's someone who is supposed to give you instant impact and said, you're almost going to be to a third of a season waiting for him to get going, which is part of the nature of this, but also disappointing.
The other free agent signing that was of note, Steve Cishek, he's been brutal. Do we know why?
No, not necessarily. It's just that he hasn't looked like he's had his command, and he's kind of floated a lot of sliders up there. But, yeah, even he was decent last night, but it kind of spoke to how far he's kind of already slid in the hierarchy that he was pitching last night in a game that I think by the time he brought in, he was already down four. He's a guy who, is not overpowering. He probably hits 90-91 at this point in his career, and it's really about having that slider command going, and it hasn't been there yet. I hope it doesn't put that huge bomb Luis Robert hit off of him in a different context if he's kind of struggling to find it. But it's a weird situation with all the one-year option guys like Encarnacion and Gio Gonzalez and Steve Cishek when you're wondering, like, how much is this team going to spend next year and kind of a limited time for these kind of veterans to really get going. If they're all kind of just kind of struggling out of the gate, the White Sox kind of just, purge a lot of their gains from this last season as far as acquisitions because, you had a cadre of veterans who never really showed you what they're about, and their options are even more expensive than the years you signed them for this season. And if you're shedding salary, you just kind of drop a lot of what made this roster look well-rounded in spring training.
Talking White Sox with James Fegan of The Athletic on Sports Radio 670 The Score. You mentioned Luis Robert, and I was a little surprised that he didn't start the game, comes in as a pinch hitter, especially because of the size of that outfield that we saw. It's not just the triple, the inside the park home run that's got to remind you. You need range out there, and for an outfield defense that has been lacking that, I was a little surprised that he wasn't out there prowling around. And meanwhile, it does seem like there is a pitching approach to him that is starting to develop from opponents.
Yeah, he's getting thrown sliders nonstop and being attacked away, like we could have probably predicted he would have based off just watching him in the minor leagues. He was somebody who would dive out to the other side of the plate. The difference was if you throw him a below average slider in AAA, he would dive out of the plate and hit it 450 feet, and you can't do that as easily now. He seemed pretty unimpressed by it and didn't seem super worried about the way he's being attacked, but I took his day off as purely just the idea that, like, over the last eight games, he's striking out like a 40% rate. He seemed like he was clearly scuffling. His swinging strike rates right now, if they projected over a full season, would be like historic. I think he's like something around like 23%. Like, I think the worst Joey Gallo has ever done is around 18%. So he'd be useful in Detroit. But I thought that the offensive numbers clearly kind of hinted towards, like, let's give this guy a day off to kind of process things, that I didn't see it as like a big thing. And typically that's where Adam Engel has earned his keep the last 3 years, is that he would patrol that even if he wasn't giving you anything offensively. So the fact that didn't work out and even produced an inside the park home run just kind of speaks to just nothing going right now.
Where are we on any other injury news? Because there's pages and pages of this. Is the imminent return of Anderson just the next important thing?
Yeah, I mean, the rotation is unsustainable, I would say, at this point, in terms of having a bullpen day, of the fact that you're trying to get bulk innings out of Drew Anderson just this weekend. So
Saturday was just gross.
You need, as much as I wouldn't try to put on the shoulders Ronaldo Lopez to come back and be a savior. You want to see progress on that as soon as possible. And, you know, when Rick Hahn spoke to the media the other week, it was very much the idea that they were not going to go out and, you know, add to the rotation of any kind, because they had Rodon and Lopez coming back from shoulder ailments that they did not see as major or season ending, or even stuff that would keep them out through the end of August. So that seems like the really vital thing that needs to happen and everyone should be watching for, because that's when there's some sort of stability towards their starting pitching situation and allows the fact that you're operating with a bullpen that's, you know, not really deeper than last year's unit, especially if you don't have Aaron Bummer and you can't really afford to just pick up an extra slot in the rotation once a week.
You mentioned you were looking forward to your Zoom calls today. What are you going to ask? What do you want to know?
I want to know. I'm sure they're aware of what Dallas said. And, you know, typically everything we talk about with the White Sox is about this upward trend towards their long-term goal. That's like this, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. So how do they place in context of a bad night being treated as basically a crisis or a gut check moment by one of their veterans? You know, Rick Renteria's post-game briefing certainly wasn't happy and certainly was a lot more disapproving and that we're not executing and we need to fix this than he normally is, but it was still very much, a Rick Renteria post-game presser, which is about, you know, they're working hard, but they're not doing it right now. We'll get it fixed. We'll get it done. It wasn't like, we'll see who cares about winning tonight. That's not the tone he ever strikes with this guy. So I'm interested to see if he kind of appreciates and goes along with what was stated, what the kind of gauntlet that Keuchel laid down, or if he kind of, you know, pivots back towards the general message that's been the last 3 years of, we're working towards a goal and we'll get there and there are bumps in the road, but no big deal.
Yeah, my guess is they'll try to reel it back in, that where it's going to be full damage control mode, but you can't unring that bell. James Feegan, looking forward to hearing what comes out of that press conference today from you and others. Thanks always for joining us.
Thanks for having me, as always.
That is James Feegan of The Athletic. And you're saying, well, what did he say? What did Dallas Keuchel say? What did he say? Well, guess what? We played the short version going in. I think we should hear everything that he said. His condemnation, not just of the White Sox, but the umpiring. I don't know if there is a fine in the offing for him for criticizing Dan Iasonia's inconsistent strike zone, as dependent as he is on that kind of consistency. But the powerful stuff was calling out his teammates publicly, and it raises some questions about what might be going on in that dugout and in that clubhouse. So we will hear his post-game comments in their entirety coming up next on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The confidence is that we have some pretty talented players. There's no, again, no magic bullet. It's no secret, you know, the conversation that was had with them through the work that they were doing today was to try to get guys to stay more centered in the strike zone. Again, obviously easier said than done, but I can't even consider thinking that there's anything wrong in particular with the talent that we have. Just we're not executing. We're not getting it done.
That's Ricky Renteria in the Zoom postgame, not executing it, not getting it done. And that's how all these pregames and postgames are done lately, is via Zoom. And it seems like reporters are and players, managers are all getting used to the new routine. Speaking of new things, if you should join us on Twitch, because this show is on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. You can do a quick search for it. It pops right up. If you want to actually go to our Twitter page, you can click on it right there. But twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. And there is a concurrent chat room that goes on where you can watch what's going on. It's not much to see. It's just my ugly mug and my reading glasses reflecting my computer screen. And then you can carry on a conversation as things go on. But if this works out better, obviously there's the radio.com app and there's the 670thescore.com feed. There are so many different modalities that allow you to access this show and this station. But this is a new thing that we're trying out. I think Lawrence Holmes made his Twitch debut yesterday for his show. So come on out and enjoy. And when I kind of jump in every once in a while, my Twitter handle is BernsteinShowDB. So that's me. If you ever see a message there, it's kind of hard for me to keep up with everything that's going on. It's amazing here. I have, with everything that's going on, I have the text screen here with the text zone. So I have Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. And then I have my email box. I have all of the commercial reads I have to do. I have Twitter that's open. I have the G-Chat with Ray and Jay Zawoski as we're actually coordinating what's going on. And then I've got everything else I'm looking at with the news stories, etc. And now I've got the Twitch feed. So it is there is a lot going on. I apologize if I ever sound distracted. You can understand exactly why that is. Not to mention my phone is here and people are texting me if they're listening and sending me ideas and thoughts as well. There, Dallas Keuchel pulled the pin on a grenade yesterday. So let's just listen to it. A 5-1 loss to the Tigers, and this is Dallas Keuchel's Zoom conference on this rough night.
I would have liked to see the team play better tonight, especially after kind of a defeating loss last night with Giolito and Bieber going at it. I mean, we just came out flat, and I feel like we just stayed flat the whole game. You know, we got a lot of guys. You know, let me take that back. We got some guys coming out and taking professional at bats, you know, being professional on the mound and doing what it takes to win. We got some guys kind of going through the motions. So we need to clean a lot of things up. And you know, if we want to be in this thing at the end of the season, we're going to have to start that now. And like I mentioned to you guys before, when you have enough talent to potentially win every game, it's very frustrating when you have games like this, and it just seemed like we were out of it from the get-go.
Right, Mark.
Dallas, when you're saying going through the motions, can you explain that a little more, what you're talking about?
Well, sometimes you show up to the park. I mean, we got in at 2:30 in the morning. I mean, we played a tough ball game against the Indians. That's who we're going to have to beat if we're going to win this division or we get into the playoffs. And it just seemed like we were taking a night off. We can't afford that with a young core that we have here. We got to show up every day, and even if there's no fans, we got to make sure that we're ready to go. And if we're not ready to go, we got to fake it till we make it. And just seemed like today was one of the first games that I've seen very subpar play from everybody.
Amon?
Yeah, Dallas, yeah, just what are those first steps to turning things back around?
Well, I mean, the first thing is knowing, hey, if you love baseball, show up to the park every day and make sure that you're ready to go. Like I said, if you're sluggish one day through the course of a season, you're not going to come to the ballpark feeling fresh every day. That's the beauty of baseball, is that when you show up to the park at 2 p.m., you don't always have to feel your greatest, but at 7 o'clock when the lights come on, and even though, like I said, there's no fans, you're playing competition baseball, and if you don't want to dominate the guy who's throwing to you, or if you don't want to compete against the whole lineup that you're facing, you're in the wrong sport. But there's gonna be a lot of learning curves for this team, just because of the process that this team has kind of been under the last 2-3 years, and this is one of them. So we're facing a challenge. We face a challenge tonight, and hopefully we can come out tomorrow and strap it up and play some White Sox baseball.
Vegan.
Now, so you feel like the leadership structure is in place for those conversations or that type of shift to happen, or do you feel like those conversations are already happening?
Yeah, it's not going to be something that just happens overnight. And I've seen this play out many times, and it takes a while. So luckily we've afforded ourselves. We didn't start out hot. We kind of caught fire a little bit. We weren't even playing great, but we were getting wins. So to kind of be hovering here is in a great spot, and that's why I'm so frustrated with tonight. Is we have a great opportunity these next couple games to really get some wins and keep moving the wagon forward. So as frustrating as it is tonight, we could very well easily come out tomorrow and play like we're supposed to, and then win the series on Wednesday. So it's something that happens on a young team, but we're gonna have to keep pushing forward.
Who's lying with the last question?
Tell us. With all due respect to both you and Ricky, when a manager comes out like that and that's your game, aren't you kind of like in no man's land as far as, you're not going to say, take me out, are you? I mean, at that point, what position are you in when that happens?
Ricky's done a great job with myself. I don't know how he operates with the other starters, but in my instance, he's done a great job communicating with me and vice versa. Hey, how you feeling, man? And I'm truthful with him. I've been down this road many a times, and I've lied to myself and to management, saying, hey, I'm still good to go. I don't do that anymore. I'm very honest and very open with all the coaching staff, especially Ricky. He asked me after the 6 how I was feeling. I said, hey, I got one more in me. I'm gonna empty the tank for you. And when he came out after Candelario hit that triple, which was a really good pitch in my case, he said, hey, this is your guy, so let's get him. It just so happens I jammed him, but he got enough wood on it to get it out to short right. But these things happen. But I know I was giving my all. I had a little bit left in the tank, and I communicated that to Ricky, and he let me know, hey, I got help for you too if you need it.
Dallas Keuchel, White Sox starting pitcher, laying it down on his teammates. Very subpar play, but when he came close, he didn't name names. But when he says we have a young core, he wasn't talking about Yasmani Grandal, who's been bad. When he says young, that lets you think, okay, who's young? Who's he talking about? We know what he's saying. but I don't know what he's seeing off the field or behind the scenes or when guys are arriving. There's a lot in there, and maybe you're hearing stuff that I am, because the issues that you have here, first of all, whether he's right or wrong, I don't know, because I'm always careful to this, and this is a season where this stuff matters more. I understand that this is the year for it. This is the year for intensity and reading body language and all that stuff. But when he says flat or guys not concentrating or not being there for you, you know, I think people, White Sox fans, might like hearing it. But what I'm wondering is, why did he feel the need to say it publicly?
It just seemed like we were taking a night off.
See, I saw that Saturday. I saw an entire organizational day off Saturday. I saw, yeah, we're going to just call some guys up. We're going to mess with the roster a little bit. We'll just, you know, roll it out there and go. Guys taking a night off. So what's going on behind the scenes? What is he confronting guys in the clubhouse? Is he saying something in the dugout? And is this a leadership vacuum that he felt that he needed to fill? Because all that we're hearing from other cities, other managers, is that they've been more active this year in some cases. And we discussed it. Hell, we talked about it with Jim Riggleman on this show, and just the idea of managing a 60-game season. And he said there are some things you might let slide a little bit that you just can't. Some things that you have to get on right away. David Ross has talked about it too, that you don't have time. You may not have time to let somebody work through a difficult spot. You might not have time to let somebody go with a little laissez-faire, less is more kind of parenting style, that you got to get on it. I don't know if Ricky is or not, and maybe this Keuchel public tongue lashing is a response to what he's not seeing, but that's my speculation. And that's all we can do, because we don't have access. We don't know unless we talk to some of these players. But you heard him say that it's a young core, and they took a night off. Okay. Well, is that satisfying, or is that scary? Is that something you want to hear? Is that a positive? Where you say, well, yeah, that's why you have veteran players around, is to call guys out like that. Somebody else might say, yeah, but not with reporters, not through the media. Because we're going to see the aftermath of that with today's pregame conferences and see how the White Sox get out ahead of it and around it and maybe try to water down what was said and say, yeah, well, we talked to him and he talked to him and everything's cool. Because my guess is that's what we're going to hear today is he's frustrated about the team losing the game and in the moment, but everything's fine now. And now they're just going to go get it and everybody's cool. But I don't know. We don't know how young players react to that, guys who've never been major leaguers before, and how they understand maybe hearing that kind of thing from a teammate for the first time. We're going to do the Midday Midway next. We have the most Canadian prank, I think, humanly possible. In the year that has brought us murder hornets, we have something new, terror crocodiles. Terror crocodiles the size of city buses. And when is Red Lobster not Red Lobster? We'll answer these important questions next on the Midday Midway on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
So far on this Tuesday show, we have had a lengthy conversation with Jed Hoyer. We talked about the current college football lie that's going on, the ridiculousness of college football's major conferences saying how much they care about player safety, and then they're obviously not telling us what they're being told by doctors and scientists about whether or not they can play safely, and we know why. We're watching what's going on. They're telling us what is actually important to them. And now, of course, it's leached into news coverage as well. And I just mentioned that personally, It's fine with me. I can live without college football much more easily than I can live without other sports for a whole lot of reasons, because for too many reasons, when we've talked about college football for the last quarter of a century on these airwaves, it's been about horrible, horrible, horrible things that have been facilitated by that sport and people's fandom, and it brings out a certain toxicity of expression that is also unique to the response from fans who just want to spray reptile venom in all directions if somebody dares veer off complete fealty to some university's football team. We talked to James Fegan about the White Sox, and we played in their entirety the comments from Dallas Keuchel taking his teammates, unnamed teammates, to the woodshed for taking a night off, for not caring, for not showing up, for not playing hard enough, and find it interesting that he would feel the need to do that and empowered to do so. The reaction is going to be important as well. Well, we've had murder hornets. How about terror crocs? From CNN, a new study has shed more light on gigantic terror crocodiles that once roamed the world and preyed on dinosaurs. They are said to have had, these crocodiles had teeth the size of bananas. The research, published this week in Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology, found that Dinosuchus, a lineage of giant late Cretaceous crocodilians from North America, were nearly as long as city buses, growing.
I thought I read that.
33 feet in length. Dinosuchus was a giant that must have terrorized dinosaurs that came to the water's edge to drink, according to Dr. Cossette, the co-author of the study. This was in a news release announcing the research's findings. Until now, the complete animal was unknown. These new specimens we've examined reveal a bizarre, monstrous predator with teeth the size of bananas. Dinosuchus's name means terror crocodiles, but the study's authors say they more closely resembled alligators. But the snout was long and broad. There were two mysterious holes at the tip of its snout, which differentiated it from both alligators and crocodiles. There were at least three species. They lived in the west of America from Montana to northern Mexico and along the Atlantic coastal plain from New Jersey to Mississippi. They say it was likely the largest predator in its ecosystem. Well, if somebody's eating these things, I want to see it. If someone's like, what are you hungry for today? I don't know. Let's go eat a crocodile the size of a city bus with teeth as long as bananas. I'm hungry for that. That and a bacon cheeseburger. They've discovered bite marks from this predator on everything from dinosaur bones to turtle shells. But they lived between 75 and 82 million years ago, so you don't need to worry about them. It is unclear how they became extinct or what happened to them. They disappeared before the main mass extinction at the end of the age of dinosaurs. This may be as Canadian as it gets, because there's been a mystery across Canada. Satellite dishes are appearing on top of beaver lodges. And I don't mean like some fraternal order. I mean actual beaver dams in lakes, satellite dishes. In a pond, there's a swampy area, and you drive by and say, wait a second, did I just see what I just saw? And yeah, this is from the CBC. There's one on the outskirts of Thunder Bay. It says the internet is awash in photos of similar installations in southern Saskatchewan, coastal Newfoundland, Montreal, Snow Lake, Manitoba, Timmins, Bancroft, and Caledar, Ontario, among other places. In northwestern Ontario, satellite dishes have been spotted atop beaver lodges near Red Lake. I used to fish near Red Lake. And Rainy River First Nation. A Bell Canada spokesperson told CBC in an email, I could not locate this beaver lodge in our customer database, but sometimes satellite TV customers will move their service between their homes and vacation properties. The spokesperson said the beavers might wish to contact the company about an upgrade, as the dish in the photo is more than 12 years old. They talked to a professor of environmental science at the University of Alberta that's been studying beavers for more than 20 years. They said they'll build a lodge with just about anything, saying they're capable of installing their own satellite dishes, but they're lacking in the technical department, so they couldn't directionally install it in a way that they would get good reception. They could install it, it might be covered in mud. And it seems, they conclude, that this might just be a quintessential Canadian prank. As they say, Canadians have a profound connection to beavers. It's our national symbol. I thought the maple leaf was your national symbol, right? Am I wrong? And beaver lodges are such a great, obvious structure on the landscape that installing satellite dishes or Canada flags seems to go well with the Canadian identity. Okay.
I prefer beaver.
It could have ended up between fried shrimp and seared scallops, reports NPR, or squeezed between a cheesy biscuit and a mound of garlic linguine. But a rare lobster has a new home at the Akron Zoo after being discovered at a Red Lobster last week. On Tuesday, the staff at a Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio location of Red Lobster were unpacking an airlifted delivery of live lobsters when Laura Jones noticed a strangely colored shape mixed in the mottled bunch. At first, it looked like it was a fake, culinary manager Anthony Stein said. He was out of the restaurant when colleagues texted him a picture of the find. He said it's something marvelous to look at. What he was looking at was a blue American lobster floating among the common red namesakes of the seafood empire. And it is indeed, it is blue, blue. It's sort of a, almost like a gunmetal kind of blue with cobalt flecks in it. It's really cool looking. Some researchers believe that only 1 in 2 million American lobsters are blue, the result of a genetic anomaly. Well, yeah, obviously. It's somebody didn't spray paint it. One of the servers said we kept it in the tank, made sure that nobody took him in the back for dinner. They contacted their corporate office, which in turn reached out to the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch Program. And both Red Lobster and the Akron Zoo partner with the program that promotes sustainably sourced seafood. So by Friday, Seafood Watch had connected the two, and the zoo's aquarium staff were rallied, so they sprung into action. They prepared a suitable area. They made a cage so the lobster would feel comfortable. They loaded up a giant cooler with cold salt water and made the 15-minute drive to relocate the Red Lobster's blue lobster, nicknamed Claude, C-L-A-W-D-E, after the chain's mascot. We actually, when I was a little kid, I just remembered this. We had a fish tank upstairs, a freshwater fish tank, and we had a crab, and the crab's name was Claude. We thought that was very clever. And then Claude, like, died after 2 days, so that was the end of Claude. But this version of Claude, I think, is going to be fine. In Akron, they're waiting to show Claude because there's going to be, the lobster is going to be molting soon. They think it's a she, and it's going to go through her next molting cycle where she will shed and renew her shell. It's a precarious time, so they're waiting to show her off. And lastly, I don't know what to make of this, but a Michigan woman celebrated her 103rd birthday and being sprung from lockdown at a nursing home by getting a tattoo. Dorothy Pollock just turned 103 on June 16th in COVID-19 lockdown at a Muskegon nursing home. And they realized they had to get her back out in the world, according to her family. The nurse in the home said she was depressed. We needed to get her out. We couldn't see her. We had no idea how she really was. She's extremely hard of hearing, so phone calls were not helpful. So she celebrated her freedom by getting her first tattoo. And it's the identical Mike Tyson face tattoo. No, I made that up. It's not. It's a small frog on her arm. She said it was pretty exciting because years ago, my grandson wanted me to get one and I wouldn't do it. All of a sudden, I decided I'd like to have one. And if I could, a frog, because I like frogs. Ray Reasoner Jr. of AWOL Custom Tattooing in Muskegon said Pollock is the oldest person he has ever tattooed. She took it like a champ. I didn't even see her wince. Maybe she had half a wince once. Pollock followed up her first body ink with another personal first, taking a motorcycle ride. Send her up to Sturgis. Get her on the back of a hog and send her up to Sturgis, or it sounds like people are going to a Smash Mouth concert and breathing on each other. The centenarian said she and her family are now planning further adventures. What's next? Gonna do a line of blow and jump out of an airplane. I mean, what is she gonna do? Next adventure, she's gonna go golfing with Dale. 103? Who cares? Why just a small frog at that point? Why not get like a full arm sleeve thing or something? I don't know. There's got to be. If you're 103, I guess it doesn't matter what age you are, right? If you're gonna do it, who knows how long any of us are gonna live.
I don't want to stereotype, but it might be difficult to tattoo an arm with that much flapping skin.
Yeah, like, no,
don't
seriously.
You need, like, some level of tautness to the skin to do a tattoo.
This picture of her, she looks every bit of 103 too. It's not like you look and you say, well, you know, it doesn't look. She looks like she, from the picture, she looks like she's already passed away. Or, unless there's something messed up with the lighting here, because yeah, biker granny. I'm gonna put this in the Twitch chat. I'm gonna copy the link into the Twitch chat because you gotta see this. This is really.
was it the movie The Great Outdoors where the whole family took a picture with the dead guy at the restaurant? Like there's just a corpse sitting on a chair and they're all taking a picture. I think it was The Great Outdoors, but yeah.
That happened us actually when we were at O'Hare and we were getting ready to leave for our fishing trip and there was a woman, looked like she's 100 years old and she was sitting in one of the seats there at the ticket counter by the wall. And I look over and I said to my dad, I said, she doesn't really look good. And he's like, yeah, I know, she doesn't.
Well.
And then we go to the ticket counter and we look back and she was like deep green. Like, and completely 100% expired.
Ugh.
I mean, just absolutely dead. And there were a couple of, I think they were Coast Guard members that were there that started administering CPR, and it was like no shot. Like it was like they started doing it. They kind of looked at each other. They kept going and doing a little CPR, but it was like she looked kind of bad. Then like literally 2 minutes later, we looked back and it was like dead. Like stop the fight. It was over. It was all over. And that was the first thing is recalled to mind when I see this particular picture. But yeah, if you're on Twitch, you can get a look at it. twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. That's the Midday Midway.
This ball game is over.
Yep, over. Let's talk some Blackhawks. Their playoffs start tonight at like midnight. When is it? It's a 9:30 puck drop our time, I think. Charlie Romiliotis of NBC Sports Chicago, Blackhawks insider, will be our guest next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.